Det har blivit dags för ett nytt motbrusavsnitt. Turen har kommit till ett föredrag som hölls på Café 44 i Stockholm under 2016. Det handlar om Grekland, det handlar om ockupationsrörelsen i Grekland och det handlar om hur aktivister och anarkister tog sig an det som i folkmun kallades för flyktingkrisen. Någonting som jag själv skulle, som ni säkert redan vet, velat titulera som ekonomikrisen eller statskrisen om vi så vill.
That it would be more interesting, like, to present more about how the squatting movement in Greece is formed regarding the groups that are participating and what kind of facilities, like, the squatting movement is providing, and how they're thinking of reclaiming, like, usually public spaces or stuff like that. And it would be interesting to finish a little about the whole movement of squatting from and for the refugees that are lately a big thing in Greece, and it's gonna be for a while, for the next years as well. So it might be interesting how it's gonna, it began and how it's gonna go on. In Greece, actually, the whole thing, it began around the 80s and in Exarchia. The squatting movement is actually connected a lot about the general struggles in Greece, about working struggles and student struggles, and now with refugees and also environmental issues. Always the squatters used are still supporting these movements and trying to participate actively in that. Most of the places who are big squats are public places. So it is a lot of the character of reclaiming public places and what it's supposed to be government's property. It's actually property of all. So it's a thing that it's very connected with the anarchist and anti-authoritarian movement generally. It's come to doubt like the property of someone against for self usage, and it's there are buildings for everybody to use and groups to organize and meeting places for the neighborhood, or to put out some facilities like social cooking and public like libraries and even gyms and theatrical places or labs to create stuff. So it most of the squats are including stuff like that. Of course, there are squats who are more targeted in the how art can be connected with our lives and be more aggressive and against the state or whatever. There are also taking place things like self-organized learning sessions about whatever the needs are. Of course, the people who participate in these structures are actually putting like the routes, whichever direction they want, they are interested to do. Like the general topics that are quite common in most of the squatting places are like the defections and the, how is it, the gender issues, that was what we said, the reclaiming public spaces and a critique on how we don't use money to create stuff and to build together, to create communities, or when everybody can come and actually be themselves and react with each other, and how we should be more close, something that we lost. It's actually like places where we try to show how we want our world to be. Because it's also a training process for everyone, for all of us. How to be trained in social discussions and to take our lives in our hand, actually. Okay, the refugees thing, or immigrants, there's no actually much difference. Not at all, actually. It is becoming bigger and bigger, the issue. Now they are blocked on the northern borders. Everything is closed. They are, in this time that we're talking, they're actually taking all the people from Domeni and putting them in camps all over Greece. I think they are around. They have some organized, the government has some organized things. But the good thing about the refugees and the squatting movement in Greece is that they also quite active on this. From very early, when it started becoming a thing in Greece, also the refugees themselves, with the support of the local anarchist movement or general... But it's not only anarchists, actually.
Yeah.
The people who are participating in the refugees camps. Yeah, they're in the general far leftist movement. And they are quite very active, actually. There are many squads right now in Greece. Many. A few squads right now in Greece, like... Notarath, or Themistocles 58, I think, or the Venian, and they are becoming more and more. They just a few weeks ago they occupied, squatted a place in Guinea. It started also one in Kangos, Kapodistriou, that are for the refugees to live in, cooking, to organize like a meeting point. Also the teams who are participating in these squads, like when it was the celebration for the fascists, the IMI, I think. It is a fascist thing, a very big fascist thing in Greece, that it was about a very small piece of land close to Turkey that was claimed by the Turks and the Greeks, and it was a big national thing, and every year fascists are celebrating this fucking thing anyway. And by that time that also fascists from all over the Europe came to visit, it was like a movement from these groups to protect the area of Plateia Victoria, Victoria Square, where other refugees who were in the middle situation between not going further from the borders, not asking for asylum in Greece, but the procedure of going back or not, it is this kind of messed situation that they don't actually know what is going to happen. They have like a month in Greece with this card thing that they're supposed to stay in Greece for 1 month and then do something, leave somehow the country. Anyway, they're all place that they're all meeting is Plateia Victoria. And there were actually also now many refugees there, just being there waiting. So when this fascist thing came, was the time about that, these groups organized and protected with from the fascists, because they were announced that they were going to, I don't know, they were going to attack or something. And anyway... I think it's gonna move very good, because this is not something that only the anarchists are doing in favor of the refugees, but the refugees are organizing themselves as well, and they do it with the local people. And I think that this is the most important thing, that it's not like we are the good in a better situation and we're gonna help you. Mm. It's like... what for me it is the most important spirit of be able to organize, and no matter the language barrier or the cultural barrier or the whatever barrier it could be, to show also that where you are coming from, it's not the limit between people. It's an advantage to be multicultural and try to learn from each other and things like that. I'm not sure what else like to say. I would like more to be, if you have any questions or if you have any specific things that you would like to talk about or to be informed about, and of course to learn about here.
I have shitloads of questions. Well, background questions.
Yeah.
First, does Greece have squatters' rights? Are there sort of legal protections for people squatting?
Legal protection?
Yeah, like in Switzerland or like in the UK, whatever. Like there used to be in Holland, you know.
Like if, how illegal it is.
Yeah, well, do you have some protections where like the cops can't like evict you right away, or are they just not evicting you because they're just too busy with other shit right now? Like why aren't they just like stopping you guys? Because they probably. And how do you make it a safe place for the refugees?
Yes. You mean specifically for the refugees?
Well, not specifically that, but those things, of course, come together first. Because it's hard. My experience squatting has either been in Europe or it's been in the U.S. where you're, like, in stealth mode all the time. Like, and that would not be a good place to bring refugees because they would be in immigration jail in a week or something.
It's actually illegal in any way.
Okay.
Usually the biggest squats right now in Greece are actually public property.
Okay.
So it has a big mechanism, legal mechanism to be moved in order to actually evict them. The big squats are supported from many people. So for them it is a big thing if they try to evict a big squat. It happened. In 2013, they evicted many squatted places in Greece. Also, with austerity meters and more legal new laws about hiding your face law, and it became easy to get into jail for. When participating in rioting and things, it was like a whole package of repression. Yes, and it came all together. Some of the biggest quoted places in Greece was closed back then.
What year?
The 2013, I think.
Yeah, it was a bit unexpected.
No, it was big enough. It became all. Most of them became during summertime, that the movement is quite slow and... yes, this is a thing in Greece. This is a bad thing in Greece, that we usually go for vacation. And a period that when something happens, it usually happens at periods that the movement is not so powerful.
Hey, I think what it's existed now, it doesn't exist anymore. They changed it some years ago. There was this law that protected the university spaces, the asylum, because there is this history that we had the dictatorship and then it stopped at 73. And the way that the whole what helped a lot for the dictatorship to stop was that a lot of students in one of the biggest universities in Athens occupied it. And we're staying in there, and they did a lot of, they made the free radio and...
And they made their propaganda against the dictatorship. And actually, how the dictatorship fell, it was with the army getting into the university and killing many people. Many students with tanks. And by that time, it started this whole history with universities that are protected. From police couldn't get into the universities.
Oh, as a free space of thought.
A free expression space. Many of the squatted places are university buildings.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think it helped a lot, the whole movement of squatting this, because in all the big struggles, especially the student struggles, they were always occupying universities and schools for some time, like small periods. So this gave a lot of experience of squatting.
Mm.
And then so the Cubs couldn't go in. They still don't really go in, even if the law changed, because it's a bit, like, it would be a very big thing.
Like, politically, I guess.
Or something like that. I mean, it would be a hustle for them. Like, it would be...
The reply would be bad. There would be very big demonstrations. And very big.
It's not widely accepted. Okay. It's still in people's mind that police has nothing to do in universities, in places of free speech, and of where students actually are having their studies and or getting their minds open. No, why they don't evict? I think that it is... that the big squatted places are doing a lot of work with the community, mm-hmm. and it is widely supported. So they are also afraid of the bankrupt, like what will happen if they evict some of the big squatted places, because the solidarity movement in Greece, it can be quite powerful. Like when they evicted all these squats in 2013, it was a big mess in Greece because people, our people, from people of the movement, were out, but they were really make it wide open and make it known what is happening with the evictions. They started actually some smaller things around it.
But also it's a bit more socially accepted, the whole idea of squatting, because the dictatorship starts finished like that. And so it's also the whole society that's a bit more okay with this.
Is squatting a concept which, like, everyone knows about and, like, has some opinion about?
I think it is. I don't know.
But it's a different thing, right? Because when we're talking about squatting, in Greece the squats are not mostly living places. It's mostly for organizing in people, because people don't usually have that problem with homes.
No, there are a lot of living ones, but there are bits in this group.
Yeah, but the open squats are mostly for organizing.
Or both.
And also the way cities are built, I don't know, there are usually a lot of empty buildings. Athens is full of empty buildings. Also Syros, because it used to be a big port before Piraeus was made, I think it was the main port. And it was very growing a lot, and it was a lot of money going on, and then it degraded. So now there are a lot of people left. So it's
actually 400 empty houses in the whole island. It is amazing how many empty buildings there are and how people still is on the street or even pay rent. You could say it is a kind of taboo to do it on your own, but I think that it is more or less accepted for the people. It's a general concept that it is accepted.
There are people also squatting private spaces commonly. Is it as accepted to go after privately owned buildings as well, or is it?
The later years, it is also kind of a thing in Greece that there are also private property squatted. It's usually a quite standard procedure that if you contact with the owner and come like with a deal, or if the owner finds out and call the police to evict the place. For instance, in Thessaloniki right now, it is a place, a part of the city called Anapoli. It is quite of the old part of the city, where there are many houses in quite bad condition because of the earthquake, and they are abandoned for many years, and the owners didn't really give them, they didn't care about them. So the last years, many of them are being used by people, and they actually, because they participated also in the movement, they had some experience in that, so they also put out political speech out of this. But they are actually organizing themselves, like the houses. And in connection with the local social place there, they're putting out the word of it's not bad to squat and to use an empty place. And the neighborhood there is actually accepted them a lot, because before it was just falling apart buildings, and now it's a living place. In that way, yes, the property, the personal property, it is accepted to be squatted. But I think the most of them are in contact with the owners. Like, okay, we got into your house, we're gonna fix it. You just let us stay for a few years, and then we see. It is like that.
Do you think that this tactic or this skill or knowledge of to do squatting, or like to feel like you have the right to do it, do you think it's like actually a lot of people who do it, or do you think that there's some certain kinds of people or some certain groups who do it? Like you were saying that refugees are also part of this movement, or can you also see that, wow, there are a lot of homeless people, and why are they not squatting? Like, do you have these thoughts?
For now, as the things are now, and regarding the how we got used to think until now, and how we are trained and raised up, I don't think that everyone can do it. It is a thing that mostly anarchists or people of the radical part of the society does that since now. But I truly believe that it's not something that it should be done only by us. I haven't seen many people who are not in the movement to do that. Or maybe if they have done it, they don't put a political statement in that. It is a more personal thing, like to cover my basic needs of not be cold or of not be wet when it rains. Personally, I think that only the community can solve, actually, the problems. Alone, you cannot do much.
But you can do a lot for your own situation. As you said, like, if someone is cold and then there's an empty building, and then you just enter that building and you just kind of start living there, but they don't create any fuss about it.
Yes, but if you're cold and you don't want to be wet, you just do that and then it stays that there. I mean that if a house needs a renovation, you cannot do it on your own. You would need help. Even if you do it on your own, then the conditions are not very friendly for you. So it actually, it has some point, but it doesn't go further. But when a group decides to make this, or when as an individual decide to do that, but you're participating in a group, then you create something more. You create a cell of a different kind of thinking, I think.
Mm. And there is a bigger group around the squad that, for example, when you need to connect electricity, there's someone that's an electrician and would come and do it of something to be built. There are people with this knowledge and usually come to help.
It's almost, I would say, have it be a sustainable way to live. It's almost impossible without a community of squatters. Just like for my experience in bigger cities, but where there's a community, is that when one squat gets evicted, then there's places for everyone to go. Mm-hmm. And as he said, there's someone that does the electricity and someone that can help with the plumbing, and everyone's working together. You can't do this shit by yourself unless you're some super person. Compared to squatting in a town where you're like the only group, where there's like five other maybe houses, really difficult. And as they're saying too, without that community support, people just think you're like junkies or something, and they don't want you there because they see you as bad. Mm-hmm. You're like creepy rats, like creeping around. That's how you're perceived. And that's it's can be cool though, and fun and exciting, but it's not. I don't think it's sustainable personally.
For example, it was 1 year before that, a group of three people decided that they wanted to to live in Creta and Chania, and they were generally people who participated in the movement. So even if they found a place that they could actually live in, and it was created like a whole thing, they, because they participated also in the Rosanera squad, it was like people from Rosanera, but also from the general like circles, who went all together. It wasn't like three, like you said, creepy people who just opened the door and get in.
Yeah.
They put some little posters outside. The, a lot of people were around, so talking with the neighbors and explaining what is going on, and like, okay, these people don't have money to rent, and they are here. And it's normal, because this is how we don't want to live in the streets, and this is not right for us, because we don't have money doesn't mean that we have to put down ourselves. And it's actually, when you see people, when you see there is community, it's always better, because also the neighborhood and the surroundings are accepting more easily, and they see that you're a part of a bigger thing.
It's also interesting to see that there are a lot of connections between the squads and the groups.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite good with, usually every squad has a blog, and then there are a lot of links of all the other squads around. And there isn't the media where there are the news, but also there is a calendar with events. So it works very quick if something happens, a lot of people to gather.
Mm.
It's a very good communication network.
If something like eviction or something, or even attack from the fascists or the state is happening in Greece, you can learn it right up. Because even with a personal contact between the different places, like the social pressure, the squads and stuff, but also via internet, it's a... They increase, they use it a lot in order to rise up the solidarity if something happens to the place. And it helped a lot.
Also with money, like when there money needs to gather for some people that are arrested or something like that. A lot of squads all over Greece make something event and then they send money.
It's actually very important to have connections with similar things like you. Not only for the solidarity thing, but also to exchange knowledge and exchange experiences and to create things together. It's very, very nice, actually.
I've been thinking about, you've been mentioning fascists for some times.
Yes.
Would you say that the fascists in Greece, like, target squats? Is that, like, one of the things that they find really worthwhile to do, so to speak?
Squatted places have been targets for fascists, but as fascists is a part of the system. Like when it was the general eviction year in Greece in 2013, it was also many attacks from the fascists to other squads. And it usually works like that. When the state decides to attack, not only by eviction, but even with like threats or whatever, to these places, it also comes usually with attacks from the fascists. You can see it even chronologically.
But also over the control of neighborhoods a bit, I feel. Like in Marousi, when Golden Dawn, this fascist party, moved the offices to Marousi neighborhood, they attacked a lot with like 100 people to the local squad. But anyway, there is this idea of who controls the neighborhood somehow.
Mm. It was Agios Pantelimonas, the place where the fascists were really powerful. And they had... it was like no immigrants, and it was actually their place to be. They gathered a lot there, and they used it as... a meeting point that they could go and do their stuff.
Attack.
Also, Adifa people went there and opened a place, and they're trying to make their being there quite obvious. and they're quite hardcore, you could say. But it is because the whole area is full of fascists, and they probably have to be like that because in case of an attack, they have to be prepared.
Mm.
But they tried to make like the other way around. They tried to change the area and not be just the fascists who leads there. Make it safer for the immigrants and like make their presentation clear that we're not going to leave this place for you. You're not going to make something like Exarchia for your people. This is not going to happen.
Are fascists also squatting?
I don't think so.
No.
I've never heard of a fascist squat.
They are in Italy.
I don't think they need it. They have money to rent places. Like when the Golden Dawn started becoming bigger and bigger, they started to open places all over Greece. And the Adifa movement was really radical about that. They started breaking their places, putting fire in their places, be all over around, making trouble with them. The fascists were evicted by the owners because they didn't want the property to be destroyed. And this is actually what happened in my hometown. I'm coming from the north. And because the Adifa movement was very powerful there when the Golden Dawn opened their offices, and they breaked it like twice and they put fire in once, the fascists were evicted by the owner. And they pay a lot in order to find a place.
I was thinking this might be a little bit off topic, but I would like to hear something more about like Golden Dawn nowadays. The last time I like read up on it, it was like, I think it was 2013 or something. And since then I haven't really heard too much. Have they become really normalized, or is it like still a very radical party in the right wing? Do you see what I'm wondering?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly at which point it was at 2013. After Pavlos Fissas murdered from a fascist, it started the whole procedure of proving that Golden Dawn is like an illegal organized like gang, military group, and they tried to legally, like with the law, to prove that, and they actually put in jail many of the members and the master of them, Chloiakos. The trial is still going on. I don't know how this is gonna end up. What the public thinks, I think it's more closer to understand that it's not just a political party, and they're not just they don't like just to free Greece and be just a powerful Greece. And that they have, how they organize themselves, it's very hierarchical, and that they are actually gang and connected very strongly to the mafia. But now, actually, a few weeks ago, the last Pavlos Fissas murderer set free from the jail, and now I think no Golden Dawn member is in the jail. They are all out, and the procedure of the court is not actually moving a lot. They already postponed it a lot, I think for reasons like to be quite forgotten the whole incident, because the whole thing with Pavlos Fissas was the first, I think it was the first person who was murdered. And Golden Dawn took the responsibility for that. But regarding how people see it, I think it's quite high yet, but it's not so powerful as it used to be.
That's good.
But it's also high because the rest of the political parties are a really bad situation. Actually, the whole system with the political parties is fading out in Greece. No one trusts trusts the parties anymore, and I actually don't know, especially after Syriza came out and doing all this crap. I don't know how what is going to be the next step in Greece if the elections are coming. It's something to see. It's very weird right now.
From here, I think like the picture I would have maybe from general media or like the connections to Greece would be like some general picture of that Greece is like economically really being pushed out of like the rest of like European economical aspects and so on. And I'm wondering more of like on anarchist and like communities and activist levels, like do you feel like you have a lot of connections to other parts of Europe, like other people and so on? Is there a lot of like people traveling and exchanging knowledge, or like is there some projects?
You mean from the anarchist movement? Mm-hmm. If like there is people from... No. I think that there are. I think that there are people from different countries that are coming to see and help in the whole and participate actually, not to be there and see what's going on and be a part of it. I've met many people like that, and I don't know if it is a thing. I don't know like if it's a wide this thing, or is it just me that I know many people who did that.
Yeah, I mean, for the refugee situation, it's definitely that a lot of people go there. But then it's also both sides. It's like the whole NGO crap. That's like people come and they pay hotels and they have like badges and stuff. And then it's like very like organized. And then there's like this whole other side of no border kitchens and like autonomous spaces. And there is really strongly connected to the anarchist scene and to all the squads. And so... Yeah, for example, on Lesbos, there is a camp that takes care of coming boats called Platanos, and that's run completely by the anarchist scene, mostly of Athens. And then there's people's kitchens in Thessaloniki cooking for people in Idomeni. So that is actually, I think, probably the most responsive of the help situations is the anarchist.
When this whole thing started to happening and the immigrants came into Greece, it was many non-governmental organizations who were there to help. And it started from Dervenian, this autonomous organization like at the Lesbos Island, who went there. They decided to organize an autonomous thing on their own to take care of the refugees who were coming, like immediate help. And they run totally autonomous now. And there were many people who actually supported this, and they are there for months. And the movement is trying in any way to be there and to be like the different option of the non-governmental organizations, like to have their own structures and their own way of taking the decisions, and be in another way close to the refugees, and not just help, just to also to be in contact with them in order to organize whatever it's coming up, because with all the pressure at the borders now and the struggles that the immigrants are doing in order for the borders to be open, I think it's very important to keep in touch with them and to be connected with them, and actually to be there and talk and to be a part of the whole procedure. And then even for the police not to be to do whatever they want, because when they come they know nothing. Most of the people that are coming from Turkey, they are actually said that the borders are open, and that they pay big amount of money to locals, who they say that okay, give me 500 euros and I will take you to the borders, and the borders are open and you will go straight to Germany or wherever you want, and they are just lying. Just to make money, and there's lack of information actually to the refugees. So it's very important for people of like us to be there and to not to protect, but just to make things work in a different way, rather than to be just there and not knowing how to react in all of this.
Do you know if there's any connections from anarchists or other like active people in Greece, like by the borders of Greece, with people on the other side of the water?
From the point that they arrive from Turkey.
Like if there's any like infrastructure maybe set up between activists. Like.
There's a really good infrastructure. There's two main groups. It's Welcome to Europe and Watch the Map. And they give out these cards that they have in all languages where they give them the numbers. It's a number that people call when they're on the boats. They usually have like cell phones. And then, so when at a specific point when the refugees have the feeling that they're like halfway across or that they're like in international borders, because the so this is for the situation in Lesbos. The travel distance is like 8 kilometers, which is not so far, but in reality it takes them like 8 hours to cross this barrier. They call this number and then they pinpoint their location via GPS, and then there's people on the other side who take care of the boats and tell them like where to land. So they have the information beforehand. Okay, there's a boat coming with 70 people, and there's a boat coming with this and this many people. So there is this kind of like information networks. That's mainly Welcome to Europe, it's WEEU, and then Watch the Mat. And also like about the international thing, for example, in Lesbos, there's one big squad since 2012, I think, PIGPA, that was opened by actually people from Germany, Youth Without Borders, Jugend ohne Grenzen. They opened the PIGPA is kind of like, that was like a, it's a, it was like a school or like a hospital for kids, right, or something?
It was a public thing.
No, yeah, it was a public, it was like a public thing. Hospital for kids thing. So there's a lot of squads that have this name PIGPA because it was like everywhere in the communities, and now they don't use this anymore. So these are like free buildings that the state has no use for. So then people squatted it. And this squad is now like a center for people that are like in a special situation, for example, if they're sick or if they're like in a vulnerable situation. So they can live there, and there's people living there between like, I think the longest people have been living there for 3 years actually. Refugees coming and then they were sick and they get treatment or they had to wait for their family or stuff like that so they could live there. But yeah, it's also like, especially this refugee situation, it's often not so clear with all the information. The problem is on the Turkish side, you cannot operate as an NGO or as anybody because it's basically owned by like a very strong mafia that's connected to the police and to the military, and it's almost impossible to operate there. You can't go there as a No Border Kitchen and be like, okay, we're going to serve food. They're just going to come and then they're going to like beat people up or kill them. And there's really not in Greece, there's like a legal situation where you deal with the police. This stuff doesn't happen in Turkey. The police has like, so that's the also the problem with all the NGOs or people going there. I mean, there's no rules. It's like very arbitrary, yeah.
So like if a refugee is for a month in Greece, is there like actually maybe a lot of people like just without papers then, like that are actually staying way longer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is this middle stage thing. It actually changes a lot. It has been like 10 different things during this whole thing. They usually, the last thing I know is that they used to give them some kind of papers, like cards, that they allowed them to stay in Greece for 1 month to see how they're gonna get out of the country, and so they were legal for 1 month or something. Or if they want to make their papers for asylum in Greece.
They're totally overwhelmed. They have no chance of actually managing the situation. Like
the, you mean the authorities?
Sorry. Yeah, this camp that was supposed to be like the hotspot for in Lesbos, that is, and it's actually in all actuality, that's like a prison. It's not like they called camps, but they're like fucking prisons. People have to like go there and then they live in, like they get put in houses and they have to like stand in line every day in like, it's like a concentration camp almost. Like they have to stand in line every day to count, so they count them, and if they're not in line, they don't get food, for example. There's like a lot of horrible stories from these camps. But anyways, so this camp can hold 500 people, and there's like about between 1,000 and 7,000 coming every night. So I mean, they're totally overwhelmed. They don't know what to do. They don't have an infrastructure. And then it also doesn't matter if you have a paper or not, because what is the police going to do? They're going to arrest you. They have no place where to put these people. So then they're just glad when they're gone or when they're somewhere. So that's kind of where the NGOs come in.
Yeah, and does that mean also that the state actually doesn't really care about the squats that are giving people places to stay because they actually need that to happen?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It could be a condition.
Yeah.
I don't know if the reason why they don't evict them is because they actually like need them, or if it's just if they're going to do this, it's going to be a very big thing. And because the things are really tensed right now in Greece, and the people are very angry because many of them have been waiting for months to find a solution in the situation, and they see nothing happening, and you can even see this from the strikes for the riots they're making on the borders in the main.
Yeah, it's a hunger strike now, 50, I think, started.
There are hunger strikes, there are rioting.
They put fire on themselves too, last week.
Like in one of these prisons or?
No,
on the borders.
On the borders.
People are now waiting on the border to Macedonia because that was the kind of route they were taking, the Balkan route. But Macedonia closed the border, so now the people are like stranded there and they don't really know where to go. And that's also like the whole thing of like the information flow is that the situation just changes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So the people, at some point, no people come and then everything kind of changes a little bit. But then in the other day, like there's hundreds of people coming and there's like all these bottlenecks everywhere. So then it's really hard for anyone to tell what's going to happen the next week or even the next day. So that's...
Is Macedonia like the only route actually how to get up north to Europe, or is there some other?
Yeah, I mean, there's Macedonia, and then there's, I think now they're rerouting through Hungary, but I mean, it's, yeah, they kind of have to go through
this. It's the easiest way to cross the less borders in order to go to the northern Europe. From Macedonia, I think they have to cross two more countries.
Yeah,
only.
Yeah, of course. To even get to the EU, because they're not.
This is the thing, that it's very tense, that I don't think that the state can actually do a lot of things about the squatting places for the immigrants. And I think that they are actually afraid of the reaction to that. It gives solution for many people. They cook every day food for a lot of people. They have clean, dry clothes there. They have many families are staying there, and people with problems or individuals. They are actually very good structured.
The thing is that they are trying to kind of like bureaucratize the whole event, the whole system of the migration management. But the state moves very slow, and for example, I think they made a law in 2015 that all the volunteers have to register, and now in it was in February 2014, that's when they made the law, and now in 2015, finally the website went up where people can register to be volunteers, but like they don't even, like nobody does it, it's kind of like voluntary or whatever, so some people do it because they think it's enough, but of course other people don't, like. It's like ridiculous. So I mean, they can't. Yeah, it just moves too slow. The stuff is just happening too fast.
They are trying to make it more like well structured. That you have to have papers to be like an official volunteer in order to participate in this whole thing.
You have to have papers to be able to help.
Yes, they are trying to be more accurate about that because they don't like autonomous people to show that it could be done in a different way with like almost no money and no structures at all. And I've heard that this was very annoying for the NGOs, that the people from Platanos, the autonomous group, really did much more work than the other organizations, and with almost no funds. At the beginning, they really had a very weird relationship between Platanos, the autonomous organization, and the NGOs. They were really like fighting against.
It's good. Yeah, I mean, they were stealing stuff from them. I mean, they're like absolute. The situation is absolutely fucked. Like the UNHCR, they're like fucking assholes, like through the board. I mean, there's like really, there's individuals in like some of the NGOs that are like really nice, that are like open. Like we got, for example, like a tent from people from, or like a lot of help, for example, from Doctors Without Borders. But that was all unofficial. They just gave us stuff because they were like, okay, we need you and here's stuff. But in reality, they were like, don't tell anybody we did this because then it's going to be like a problem. We're going to get kicked off the island. But the UNHCR and stuff, they're very also close to like being making prisons for people. They're not very interested in actually like solving the situation.
They get power.
Yeah, they don't have progressive politics. They meet in hotels and then they do fancy big dinners. Like.
I see similarities with Sweden. No, I see similarities with Sweden in Malmö, where Kontrapunkt was shut down because they were helping too many refugees. I mean, it's so weird if you look at it from like this. It's in a smaller scale because we have fewer refugees, but it's still the same thing. It's like a conflict between like bureaucratized NGOs and governmental functions and people actually helping. There is a big conflict. And I think that is important to lift as a thing. How can helping people be a problem? I mean, come on.
Yeah, there. For example, there's a really good example in Lesbos. It's called this organization called the Dirty Girls. And the thing is that all the refugees come and they're like 8 hours in the boat, so they come. They have wet clothes, and the first thing you do is like you get them dry clothes because otherwise they like. Just freeze, and it's a really big problem. The NGOs were bringing in all this kind of clothes on the island, and then they just were throwing the old clothes away. Nobody took care to like wash them or anything. So Dirty Girls was this, and these are like just really like very, I wouldn't say they're like anarchists, other than they would probably not call themselves anarchists other than by heart. They're just like these most amazing ladies I have ever met, like kind of middle-aged women that were just like, no, this is a big problem. And then they just organized this thing that they would take, collect all the clothes from all over the island, because the people, they come wherever on the beaches, and they would collect all the clothes, and then they would wash them, and then they would distribute them again. They would sort them, and they distribute them again for the people. And it's like such a like simple, basic idea, and it's for a fraction of the cost than even getting rid of all the trash from the island, so, because that's a really big problem in Lesbos, for example. And it's crazy that like such a simple idea is something that no NGO would ever come up with.
This is like household knowledge, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's like household knowledge, and it's also, I mean, women, it's like, yeah, and it's also run like that. And they have like the volunteers helping them in the warehouse, kind of sorting the stuff, and they do like kind of, they do like big parties for like sorting the socks, for example. It's very hard to like sort a couple hundred socks to find pairs, because actually most people that come, they like to have like pairs instead of things. But yeah, anyways. But also they were just like so, I mean, within all this fucked up situation that was really like weird, like all this shit going on, like you would hear people drowning every day and stuff. These were just like the most, I don't know, heartbreaking women. They had like a little lamp in their camp. They were like hugging and stuff. It was just like, how absurd is that? They have like a little lamp in the camp. I don't know. It was just really amazing. Oh, and these are the cards they give out. This, so that's kind of how the people know where to call. And then there's a whole network of people watching the ocean, and they go out and get the boats to land safely, kind of thing. So where we were, there was people from from Spain, Castilla de León, and it was like this fireman. It was really funny. You could have made like a TV series with them. They're like Chief Fire is their name, but they're like super nice and just like these guys that came from Spain to help out in this situation, and they were like super prepared, and they just sat on this like spot all night checking the mails and dealing with the refugees coming and then getting the boats and seeing that nobody, because a lot of people drown in this kind of hectic of leaving the shore, leaving the boat. So
last year,
what the refugee situation?
Last year it was much more massive, but yes, but okay, throughout like the whole history, it was these islands that were actually accepting people from Turkey. But some months before this so massive moving, it was a period that was also many boats and drowned people in the borders of Greece and Turkey. The police of the sea,
the Coast Guard.
Actually had very different tactics. They used to put down the boats and just a little bit
push
them back to Turkey. Yes, because these boats are really poor equipment, rubber boats that are, and especially when they're so full, it's so easy to turn around, so they just the Coast Guard just went with their machine boats there, and they just shouted at them or even fired them with their guns, and they threatened them, and they just pushed them back with the waters of the machine.
Yeah, they make waves, so then people think the boat capsizes. Or what they are doing now is they hose them down. They have like water cannons on board, and then they hose them down.
It was many months of this kind of situation that it wasn't widely known, so they could do whatever they wanted because it was like on the borders also, like no one knew. Some incidents came up to the media. The common sense wasn't in the favor of the immigrants who were coming. It was also like we tried to protect the borders. Many incidents happened, and then it became so massive that they could not longer do whatever they wanted. And this is how it also started when they realized that they cannot manage this amount of people. It started to be more organized. But I don't think either our people were very prepared about that. And it was just something that they see growing and growing, and that it would last for some time. And this is how they decided, I think, to go there and actually be there. From the assemblies, from the squad place, the place in Athens that they decided to go to Mytilene, it was actually some people that said, I'm going there for a year. And they left everything behind and they went to organize it there from the beginning. But this is the good thing. I think that this is a good thing, that because they had all the experience of the previous self-organized things, it was easier for them to set up this thing on the island in a whole different context. But still, the connection between the people and how the things are decided, how the decisions are made, it was the same thing, the same pattern. So even with this, I think it helped a lot.
I think there's also like examples on a more, I guess, global scale of how like the squatter scene and people from like the anarchist movement are like, they can operate in these kind of situations. I think there's an example from the US where, I think it was in Katrina, where the FBI actually asked, because there was an example beforehand where they couldn't manage, and the only people that actually brought disaster relief that was actually working was like the squatting scene and Food Not Bombs. So then they actually asked them, and they got tons of money from the state for like providing food, and because they were the only ones that could work in this kind of situation. The NGOs are not, they're not equipped for that at all. The first thing they do is like they rent cars and then they put big stickers on it and then they drive around and take photos.
I guess the point is, it's not a question of being equipped. It's almost like these other organizations are like over equipped in in some silly way. Mm.
They can't, they have a like, very strong organization.
Yeah. They can't do things.
Bureaucracy, yeah.
Yeah.
They just can't. They can't just decide to do something.
Yeah.
They have the shit
yeah,
sitting
yeah,
there.
Of course,
will,
yeah. They don't. I think, and that's kind of like, I guess, yeah, I would call this like an anarchist principle that you're responsible for your own actions, and then you just go there and do stuff because it's necessary.
Well, I mean, in terms of Katrina too, I mean, a lot of people there just sort of self-organized and took care of each other too,
yeah,
without any sort of background in the radical scene at all. Like, the FEMA people were coming in, or like the cops were coming in, they were the problem.
Yeah.
It wasn't cool at all. Well, I mean, but Katrina's a, I guess there's a lot more racism involved in that whole story too.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
it's a different, it's a more different dynamics.
That's the whole point, I guess, with like some, this anarchist idea.
And it's totally scary. Like, for example, like in this refugee situation, the NGOs, they act like, I mean, yeah, they do the same thing. They have like procedures of how they welcome a boat, and then they put like bracelets on people's arms so they know. They first thing they do is like register them in some way. They basically do the state's work, and then we talk to them, and they have this progressive idea about, yeah, no, we give them bracelets so the families don't get split apart and stuff. And it's like, what kind of situation are you running that families get split apart? And these are like big organizations. This was International Rescue Committee. They actually pay their volunteers to do this stuff. It's crazy, but their camp looked like a prison. They have like badges and stuff to give the volunteers authority over the non-organized volunteers and over the refugees. And I think that there comes a lot of other stuff in. It's like, yeah, you're not even interested in these people as people. It's
yeah.
like, yeah, you do this for your whatever reason. And then
and
like,
I ask
you,
myself, like, why are they even doing
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
What do they want to achieve with that?
Mm.
Like, what's the point? What would happen if they don't do it? You know, it's not like, what is the chaos going to lead to? What are people so afraid of?